interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McLean on today's News Talk, TNT.
This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk. For Brian McLean, I'm Timothy Shea. We are coming to you live from Central Texas and Central New York. You can visit us on the web at tntradio.live. Well, Brian, the little darlings down at Duke this weekend showed that they were indeed Blue Devils when they walked out on commencement address speaker Jerry Seinfeld en masse. You know, I didn't like Tilly Olson. I didn't like Archibald Cox, but we had respect for the university. We had respect for their role as commencement speaker. And more importantly, we had respect for our parents and for ourselves not to walk out on those speakers simply because we disagreed. But this is the intolerance of the left now. If you don't like something, you have a right not to hear it. It should be banned. The person should be canceled. They should be debanked. They should not be able to make a living. They should be ostracized from society if you and your infinite wisdom deem it to be so. Well, fortunately in North Carolina, Brian, the grownups are back in charge, at least at the University of North Carolina. Their board has slashed DEI funding and diverted all of that money to campus police departments.
Interesting. Well, I certainly wouldn't send any kids there, that's for sure. I don't know if more campus police is the right answer here, but, you know, that's how it goes.
Well, I think if nothing else, it's a powerful message. And it's a message that needed to be sent. And Brian, everything that's old is new again. Back in the 1960s, we had COINTELPRO. In the 1990s, we had PATCON, Patriot Conspiracy Operation, that was conducted against Christians. FBI just can't seem to break the habit of using informants and agitators to trap targets, instigate or enable terror attacks, all so that the events can be used as propaganda. Think the Gretchen Whitmer attempted kidnapping when 4 out of the 6 people in the back of that van were Fed assets.
Yeah, or Oklahoma City bombing, or perhaps the first World Trade Center incident, or Newburgh Sting. I mean, we could go on and on and on. We could talk about Ruby Ridge. We talked about Waco recently. Yeah. They just do this over and over and over again, you know, and it's like we talk about the politicized FBI as though it's, you know, something that just happened after Trump. But no, this has been going on for a very, very long time, and they use that so that they can manage narratives.
This is an organization, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, that has been corrupt from its very inception. Hoover stayed as director through 5 presidents by blackmailing each and every one of them. They used the techniques of the mob in order to stay in power, and they used the mob to get power. Oh yeah, we got this big national crime wave. We should have a national police force, don't you think? And America has been the worse for it ever since. They've stopped no terrorism, they've stopped no crime, and really all they've done is infringe on American civil liberties.
Yeah, well, we've got a guest coming on later in the program who's going to talk about that a little bit. Maybe we may have to provoke him into talking about it, but it certainly is part of his presidential campaign. So, yeah, a lot of people are sick of it at this point. They're tired of seeing this kind of thing happen.
They are, and it's gotten to the point where I think we need to scrap the FBI and start over. And maybe it doesn't fall under the jurisdiction of Department of Justice, because I think, Brian, that's where a lot of the problem comes from, is that FBI is essentially acting as the brown shirts for the DOJ's Gestapo. Something needs to change, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the FBI needs to be shuttered, and the DOJ at least needs to be audited big time and reformatted. And much of this stuff needs to go towards states' rights. And if we want to have some sort of federal law enforcement agency, they should be serving the people and making sure that state law enforcement agencies aren't being weaponized against their citizens.
Exactly. I like that plan. Don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so that you can easily watch or listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on today's news talk, TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We have seen unbelievable corruption in the five Donald Trump trials. Let's walk it through. We had to pass a law to extend the statute of limitations so that crazy, blazy E. Jean Carroll could sue Donald Trump for allegedly sexual assaulting her in a dressing room at Bergdorf Goodman. She can't quite remember when it happened or what really happened, but she certainly remembers that it happened. And of course, Donald Trump is fighting that judgment now on appeal. We had the verdict first, trial afterward, with Judge Arthur Engoron, where he valued Mar-a-Lago at $18 million. That case is also on appeal. We've got now the Stormy Daniels hush money trial going on in Manhattan, along with the election interference case in Atlanta, Georgia, that's falling apart because, well, Fannie Willis maybe wasn't the best prosecutor to bring that case. And finally, we have the documents case brought down in Florida, and Judge Aileen Cannon seems to be the only jurist among the five that actually cares about applying the law. Here to discuss is our colleague and very good friend, Joe Hoft. Joe, if you were to script these five trials in this political campaign, and you would have brought it to Hollywood 20 years ago, what do you think would have happened to you?
Well, 20 years ago, they would have laughed it out, right? They would have said, this is, you know,
they would have locked you stupid up as crazy.
Yeah, they wouldn't accept it. That wouldn't be, wouldn't be something they'd make a movie out of for sure. It's just so outrageous. As you're going through that list, my blood starts boiling. It's just every one of these is such a sham. I'm sitting here thinking about that E. Jean Carroll case. You mentioned that Judge Kaplan, he's a Clinton judge, just a nasty guy. Trump even said, this is one of the most abusive guys I've ever seen. Just nasty. And it wouldn't let Trump do all sorts of stuff in the case. It's totally outrageous. But I don't think he believed E. Jean Carroll. I can't believe anybody in their right mind believed E. Jean Carroll was sexually molested. She even came out and said she could remember the dress she was wearing. And it turned out, well, that dress wasn't manufactured till like 2 or 3 years later.
After it's like Hillary being named after Sir Edmund Hillary, right?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. It's just so it was insanity. It was crazy. She's a crazy lady. She's crazy. And they allowed her to do this, and she's sick. I think the sickest thing about that lady I saw was when she was on CNN with Anderson Cooper, and she starts hitting on him, and he's gay, and she is hitting on him, and he's like, he goes immediately to a break. He's like, oh my God, we got to go to break right now. It was, she's
well, how about on The View when she offered to buy them houses?
Yeah. It's unbelievable. It's just gross. But you're right about this Florida case, and I wasn't really sold on Judge Cannon for a while. I wasn't sure if she was going to get to the bottom of this or not. I was worried that she was, just another one of these individuals that people said, here's your pick. She's a great person. And then she was going to, and she's maybe another never Trumper or uniparty or whatever. But as time has gone by, I'm more and more pleased with what she's doing. And I can even maybe see some of the logic to this. She is now unveiling stuff that's just unbelievable. And she's forced Jack Smith to start releasing these documents. And my understanding, and I'm not an attorney, guys, but when you bring up a case and you're the prosecutor and you're the Department of Justice, you have to provide to the client, that whoever you're suing, all this material is called Brady material, and the client has a right to all of it. But under Biden and Obama and under the Mueller gang, they all thought they would make the decision on what President Trump could see. And this has been going on now in this case in Florida. We will tell you what we're going to share with you, whether it's pertinent or not. We're going to make that decision. And this judge stepped in and said, no, you've got to hand this stuff over. So hat tip to her, all sorts of stuff. I don't know if I see Tim, you're ready to say something, but one thing that happened last night that Julie Kelly unveiled was that there is a line in there where they say that, and I wrote about this last night at joehoff.com, it says something like there was basically a mole in the Trump team who was working with Jack Smith. And this is all information that he should have shared with President Trump. You know, it's kind of pertinent to his case, don't you think? Hey, we inserted somebody into your universe, and it was a mole. Not only that, but it was an attorney who had attorney-client privilege. So this is who the kind of person was working for the DOJ. Now, to me, that's really important. And the fact that they've withheld that information is as bad as the fact that they inserted documents. She also had them out, you know, out this information that they inserted, documents into this case, made it look terrible. These classified folder binders were all inserted by the DOJ. So they're setting him up, and they've inserted a mole into an attorney who has attorney-client privilege. So it's somebody pretty close to Trump. And that is just, I believe that's criminal.
Well, it is criminal because they use the information that that attorney, in violation of the attorney-client privilege, gave to Jack Smith. That was the predicate for the Mar-a-Lago raid, for the search warrant. This whole thing is criminal. The attorney mole belongs disbarred and in prison, and so does Jack Smith.
I agree. Jack Smith is a monster. I'm so tired of these monsters. They're absolute monsters. There's no rule of law anymore. This is the key, I think, to any society. It's in any great country, if you take away the rule of law, then you're done. And that's what's going on here. And it's one of the most sacred things about our country, that and our elections, that's been just totally blown apart by this Obama-Biden regime. And yeah, there's, you know, people could go back further. Yeah, certainly the Clintons were just, they were just hoodlums in the White House. But these, what Obama's done to this country is so sick. I mean, Trump stepped in and he didn't even have a prayer. That DOJ was Obama's the whole time. They were after Trump the whole time, lying to him, spying on him, setting him up, trying to get him for cases we don't even know. By the way, I read too about this case, this Bragg case. It's like, we still don't know what the crime is. We really don't. Some of these legal experts,
I don't
like
think
Mark
Bragg knows.
And I noticed how you talk about this Bragg case. You say, and a lot of people do, that it's the Stormy Daniels case. When you look at the filing, there's 34 charges. They're all accounting entries. They should call it the Trump accountant case, because that's what it's all about. And there's no crime there. And yet it's truly, but you're right in that what they wanted to do is bring up Stormy Daniels so they could slander President Trump and throw this garbage in front of the country again and hope that people will be disgusted with Trump. Instead, we've got Joe Biden, his daughter's diary coming out over the last 24 hours, where there's evidence that that was her diary, where she's talking about as a child having her father take showers with her, which is sick, perverted stuff. So, you know, that's what we're seeing right now. If anybody who's connected is just, we're not buying the stuff about Stormy Daniels. We don't even know to this day, and you may argue this, I don't know, maybe you've got some information. We don't even know that Trump, ever did anything with Stormy Daniels. Quite frankly, there's documents where she signed and Cohen have signed that said there was no Trump there. And so what is the truth? And we know that they're both, I'd say both are liars. They've both said multiple things about this story over the years. So that too is just, it's just a mess. What's going on with these Democrats? Is this really going to be how they want to run elections going forward? I mean, is this really, really where America's at now? I guess it is, but it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's salacious. It's ridiculous. Real quick, Joe, I want to point out that on your website, joehoff.com, there's a great article up there. The Left's Election Industrial Complex Discovered and Defined We probably don't have enough time to deep dive into it, but I just wanted to give you a shout out and make sure that everybody knows to go to your website and look at that, because there's a great infographic there. Very scary and thorough infographic, and then a great write-up.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah, we've got an update to that, too, just put up here moments ago. So, these guys are playing in fifth generation warfare, and Republicans are trying to figure out whether we should vote on election day or not. It's just got a lot of ground to make up here, for sure.
We sure do, Joe. In fact, every time we have you on, it's always hard to pick just one or two topics because there's so much great information. If you're not checking joehoff.com on the regular, you really need to. It's a way to keep up on everything. Joe, can't thank you enough.
Thanks, guys. Great. Great job. We'll catch up soon.
Stay tuned for more State of the Nation right here on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Rick Munn.
Then he goes on to quote somebody called Thomas Davis. He said, "It's not blood that makes you Irish, but willingness to be part of the Irish nation." Absolute bollocks. It's your blood that makes you Irish. Then you can choose to turn your back on Ireland and be not Irish and be a traitor to Irish, as the Irish government are doing. It's not your willingness to be Irish that makes you Irish. He says, "Say no to racism, bigotry and hatred by voting number one for Shaikh Omar al-Qadri on the 7th of June in the European elections." Omar al-Qadri, I won't be voting in the Irish elections, I can't. And even if I could, I would not be voting for you, you little weasel.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Eagles saga, of course, we were just talking about it, surrounding former President Donald Trump. And this is continuing today in the New York City courtroom. Today's courtroom proceedings were highlighted by testimony from Michael Cohen, Trump's former attorney and confidant, who has previously served prison time related to other legal actions against Trump. Our next guest joining us now is Gerard Felitti, senior counsel at the Lawfare Project, one of our regulars and friends over here at State of the Nation. Gerard, it's great to see you.
Great to be on.
So Gerard, Cohen told the court that in October of 2016, he took out a home equity line of credit to pay $130,000 to Stormy Daniels as part of a non-disclosure agreement to secure a, this thing about her alleged affair with Trump. Of course, Trump has consistently denied, and he described this move as critical to preventing what he believed would be a catastrophic damage to Trump's campaign, said Cohen. But what do you think about that? I mean, isn't this interesting? Like, Timothy and I are trying to figure out how this case is even a case against Donald Trump.
Well, that's a good question. And I have to say, you know, even if what Michael Cohen testified to is true, so what? He took out a home equity line to make a payment to someone that was not illegal. Nothing he did was illegal. Nothing he did was improper. And note what he said. He did it because he thought that Donald Trump would be experiencing something related to the election, not because Donald Trump told him to do it. That is a key difference there, because without that Donald Trump acting in a certain way, there's no case. This is just Michael Cohen doing something on his own that is not illegal to begin with.
Because, you know, I would think that being Trump's attorney in these cases is remarkably light work. When Stephanie Clifford, Stormy Daniels, is on the stand, all you'd have to do is get up and say, "Ms. Clifford, this case is about accounting entries. What can you provide the court concerning Donald Trump's accounting entries?" And she would say, "Nothing. And I have no further use for this witness." Why aren't we seeing more objections to relevance?
But we're seeing objections to relevance because to be fair, Donald Trump's lawyers did not necessarily object as much as they should have last week with Stormy Daniels. And now they want to be sure they're preserving the record and that they get to ask for a mistrial or that they get to ask for a directed verdict and that all their objections are on the record. But what we're really seeing is the prosecution is, again, trying to bring in things that are not really needed to prove their case. They're immaterial. They're irrelevant.
Yeah.
They're just not what Donald Trump looked bad.
So why aren't we seeing more objections?
Well, we're seeing enough objections, but ultimately, I think what Donald Trump's team is trying to do is let Michael Cohen hang himself, because right now he's been controlled. You know, he's been answering questions, not under pressure. He's been calm and collected. But wait until we get to real cross, the meat of it, probably later today or definitely later this week. That's when he's going to be confronted with the types of questions of, isn't it true that you were arrested and charged with X, Y, and Z? Isn't it true that you pleaded guilty? Isn't it true that you were sentenced to prison? Isn't it true that you were released for COVID, but you were spotted out of your house eating at restaurants that no one else can afford? Those are the gotcha questions that are going to really pin it on Cohen and make him lose his calm, because we all know what Michael Cohen is really like. He is a self-described pit bull. He has a temper and he has a mouth that he's not afraid to run. So once Trump's team really gets in there with the question after question impugning his credibility, that's when he's going to start losing his calm.
Yeah, I think so. Also mentioned was Alan Weisberg, the then CFO of the Trump Organization, and it's alleged that Weisberg was consulted about the funding, you know, and the payment. Cohen said, quote, "I ultimately said, okay, I'll pay it." But Cohen emphasized that his wife was unaware of these maneuvers. Basically is saying that Weisberg, according to Cohen's testimony, both he and Weisberg informed Trump that Cohen would use his personal funds for the payment. And Trump's alleged response was, quote, "good, good," end quote. So, I mean, is that not pretty weak? I mean, is that just like hearsay, he said, she said sort of stuff? Is there a record of this? I mean, is it even something that is worth reporting?
Well, even if there is a record, so what? Donald Trump said good. He didn't say, you know, I want you to take money out on your loan. Don't tell your wife, by the way. Just do it all on your own. Take money out on your house and pay off this woman. He never said that. There's no testimony that he said that. If you're telling me that you're going to borrow money to pay off someone that I want to keep silent and I say good, that's what? That's I'm happy that I'm not paying out of my own pocket. I'm happy that this is being done, but I'm not directing you to do something. That's the crucial distinction. What Michael Cohen is testifying to is he did things, but he's not saying I did things because Donald Trump specifically instructed me to do them.
In fact, that is really the hanging point of this case, isn't it? Nobody has testified to anything illegal. There was an NDA. Okay. Well, NDAs are executed every single day. There was a payment. Okay. Legal payments are executed every single day. This is like the business fraud case that Letitia James concocted regarding the financing documents that the loans that Trump Corporation or the Trump Organization received from banks. Is nothing that was done was illegal, and yet they're trying to make a crime out of doing things that aren't illegal.
And more than that, we still don't know what the alleged crime actually is, because all of these are misdemeanors past their statute of limitations. What they're tying it to is some sort of a conspiracy or some sort of an intent to commit a larger crime, a federal crime, some election crime. But we don't know what that is because Alvin Bragg's never told us. We're left guessing. So that this is unusual itself. We don't know what we're actually looking for in terms of proof. But what we do know is we have yet to hear someone say, Donald Trump instructed me, knowing that it's illegal to do so, to do X, Y, and Z. All we have are things that in and of themselves are not illegal, may not even be immoral, definitely not improper. And yet we're seeing Donald Trump charged with crime. The one interesting thing, by the way, what came out today is there's one telephone conversation and only one telephone conversation that was recorded. And this is by Donald Trump's lawyer, which he intended to play to someone that was other than Donald Trump. So back then, when Cohen was acting as Trump's lawyer, he intentionally breached attorney-client privilege with the intention to play a tape recording of a conversation with his client to someone else. Now, that tells you that this guy was shady from the get-go. And here we have him a few years later. He's still shady. Nothing's changed.
In a little bit. That sure happened quickly. Gerard, hold the line. We got a headline inbound. We'll pick up right here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk. This is TNT.
TNT Radio News.
Are you ready for some awesome news?
Yes! 1, 2, 3, 4!
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Former President Donald Trump faces several criminal cases, but pretrial delays are making it increasingly unlikely that he will have to campaign from detention. Brianne Dressen, a preschool teacher from Utah who participated in AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial, is suing the company for failing to cover medical expenses arising from injuries she attributes to the vaccine.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction,
misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk, this is TNT Radio.
So, Gerard, in his testimony, Cohen also admitted to misleading the First Republic Bank about the purpose of the bank account open to transfer the funds to Ms. Daniels. He labeled the account for, quote, management consulting, end quote, purposes because he believed the bank wouldn't approve if they knew its actual intent. Is there a there, or is this just another thing that happened that is really not even worth looking at in this case?
You know, I'm baffled because having been involved with settlements to clients or to other parties, I've never had this rigmarole where I have to go to a bank and explain precisely what I'm doing with that money. It just seems gratuitous on Michael Cohen's part to have done that, if he ever did that. We're just hearing this statement, which means what? There's, again, nothing there. So what? If anything, it shows that he is a liar and that he's lying to banking officials about what he wants to do with a bank account. It doesn't tie to Trump.
Testimony that comes out, it sounds that the likely scenario is that Michael Cohen was in the relationship with Stormy Daniels and the two of them concocted a way to siphon money from Donald Trump.
That's no less credible than anything else we've heard so far. I mean, it seems that they both want to do something to Donald Trump that I don't want to say it on the radio, but they both shared that intimate moment and they wanted to do it to Trump. Because right now, that's what it looks like. It looks like two people who really hate Donald Trump, who really have nothing good to say about him, whose prejudices are well known even to the jurors who may or may not like Trump, but they know who these people are. Everyone knows who Stormy Daniels is. Everyone knows that she's out to get him. Everyone knows Michael Cohen is not a credible person, and he was burnt. He wanted to be in Trump's cabinet. He wanted to be attorney general, but he didn't get to be attorney general. So can we say sour grapes, anyone? Is there any reason that he wouldn't be happy with Trump and testifying the way he is? Well, let's look at what happened. Let's look at the past.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this revelation, I suppose, that Cohen used his own personal money to pay Daniels was obtained in a 2018 letter. And the letter also clarifies that neither the Trump Organization nor the Trump campaign reimbursed Michael Cohen for that $130,000 payment. This contradicts Cohen's testimony, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And again, at the end of the day, at most you have some accounting questions. But as Donald Trump keeps saying, that he what he's paid money for was legal services. And legal services to any ordinary person includes paying a settlement or arranging a transaction. That's done by his lawyer. That's legal services. So Trump paid Michael Cohen for his work with legal services. Michael Cohen, who knows where he got the money? Home equity. Maybe he got it in gold bars from Senator Menendez in New Jersey. We don't know where he got the money. But at the end of the day, there's nothing, again, tying Donald Trump to something that's actually illegal.
Right. Yeah. So where does it go from here? I mean, how much longer are we just going to have to wait this out and weeks on end be looking at just ridiculous you know, reporting points like this that are happening in the case, or is it going to fall apart? Do you have any predictions?
I think we're actually closer to the end than most people expect, because Al Bragg said that there'd be more testimony than just Michael Cohen, but it seems like there isn't. It seems that Michael Cohen is it. So we will see cross-examination that'll last a couple of days. We'll see Donald Trump's team really tear him apart, Michael Cohen at the seams. And after that, I mean, they will move for a directed verdict, because right now the prosecution failed to prove its case. Will they get it? Probably not. We know the judge doesn't like Donald Trump, so we will have to see a defense. But Donald Trump, there's no real reason for him to put one on, because what's he going to do? Argue to himself that he did nothing wrong? There's no benefit to him bringing additional witnesses, because he's basically disproven everything that the prosecution has had to offer. The case is almost over now.
In fact, by not putting on a defense, it makes it look better on appeal, does it not?
Well, I think it does. He has no reason to testify. He gains absolutely nothing by it. I mean, I know that he wants to comment on it, which he can do as soon as there's a verdict going into appeals. But there's really no purpose for him to put on a defense. Maybe he'll call one or two witnesses to establish his pattern of you know, not doing things that are illegal with his company. But he doesn't need to, because the prosecution failed to do what it's supposed to do, which is prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And as we saw last night, even CNN anchors are now having doubt about why this case was brought. So obviously a New York City jury should have plenty of doubt about what they're hearing.
Yeah, and exactly. And with this secret recording that Cohen took, I mean, is he still a lawyer? I'm not sure. Has he been disbarred? Will he ever do law again?
He's been disbarred. The chances of him doing law ever again depends if he's convicted of something and he wants to help his cellmate. Other than that, he is not stepping foot anywhere near a courtroom, because he has honesty problems. I mean, that's why you get disbarred, for being dishonest. And that's something that Trump's team will be pointing out for sure in the days to come.
Well, yeah. How powerful is that? I mean, as Trump's team does that, I mean, it seems like that's a pretty strong argument to make. I mean, if your witness is not credible and a proven, you know, a convicted perjurer, doesn't that cause a pretty big problem for this case? And is that why you think maybe it's closer to the end than we might suspect?
It's a huge problem, but you also couple that with the fact that this guy has an agenda. You know, it's not that you can say, okay, you can allege, okay, he lied in the past for Donald Trump, but wait a second, maybe he just lied for his own benefit, because what he wanted was a higher job. He wanted to be attorney general. He saw a light at the end of the tunnel and he wanted something bigger. And when he didn't get it, then all the lies that he said on his own because he wanted that better job, they caught up to him, and that's why he got disbarred. That's why he went to prison, and that's why he's still lying to this day, because he couldn't cut it, and he failed both as a lawyer and as a political figure or whatever it was to Donald Trump.
Gene, what do you think the odds are that Judge Merchan might shock the world and grant that motion for a directed verdict? Do you think he's concerned about his legacy and not wanting to go down along with the other judges, Engoron and the judge in the crazy E. Jean Carroll case, and the judge down there in Georgia that's not acquitted himself very well?
I think if Judge Merchan cared more about what anyone had to think about him, we wouldn't have had the rulings that we've had so far. He would have been much more to the book about the Stormy Daniels testimony, and then had a lot of that at least struck from the record as irrelevant and immaterial and actually prejudicial. But he hasn't done that. He doesn't seem inclined to care about his legacy. However, There, he does need to push the prosecution. What exactly is your theory of the case? Because right now we haven't heard anything that amounts to proof of an illegal act. So he really needs to put, and I think he will actually put it to the prosecution to explain what crime they're actually charging, because we don't know. If we don't know if we've heard enough evidence to convict Donald Trump of anything. We know we haven't, but we don't know if what the prosecution missed to put on its case, because we don't know what he's being accused of. He's being accused of falsifying records, but with a greater aim in mind. And what that greater aim is, what that relates to the election or what federal election laws he's charging under, we don't know. So I do think Merchan will call out Bragg for not charging, for not specifying, and make him clarify that before ruling on anything.
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, it's pretty amazing that we're this far into this and the three of us are sitting here talking about what is he actually on trial for? How does this
work? I don't even know how he can write jury instructions.
Yeah, how do you even do that?
You can't, and that's the problem, because you start building a case with jury instructions, whether you're the plaintiff or the prosecutor, in this case, or the defendant. You want to look what needs to be proven and what you're explaining to the jury you need to prove or not prove. And here, we don't know what those instructions are because we don't know what the charges actually are. All we know is Trump did something bad, but none of the witnesses so far have testified that anything illegal happened, just that things happened, and you can shrug your shoulders and say, so what? You have not yet heard, no one has yet heard proof that Donald Trump did something illegal or instructed something illegal to be done, just that things that are perfectly normal happened.
Okay, well, I thought maybe we were confused, Gerard, but apparently we're not, and you have straightened us back out into this upside-down world that we live in. Gerard, thank you so much. Go to thelawfareproject.org and follow Gerard over on x.com at Gerard Felitti. Gerard, thanks so much. We'll look forward to your next appearance.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you and includes steps like know your warning signs so you can act early, make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts, reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member, or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
Are you ready to help your family get prepared for the unexpected?
Here we go!
Ladybug and Cat Noir know how important it is to be ready, because you never know when Hawk Moth is going to strike or a disaster will hit. And you don't need miraculous powers. Just put those planning skills you already have to good use. Make a plan that will help you and your family be ready when emergencies happen. Ready Kids can help. Get started at ready.gov/kids.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McLean on today's News Talk, TNT.
Yesterday afternoon, presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced on X that he will attend the Libertarian Party National Convention to be held at the Washington, D.C. Hilton in 2 weeks. And he challenged former President Donald J. Trump, who previously had announced that he will address the convention party, to a debate there. Joining us now to discuss is the frontrunner for the Libertarian Party presidential nomination, Mike Termat. Mike, welcome to State of the Nation.
To be with you. Hey, Brian. Thanks for letting me have some of your time today.
So there's a problem here. I'm not sure that Bobby challenged the right person.
I'm pretty sure Bobby didn't challenge the right person. Trump has already said that he won't debate, and I don't think people are all that interested in a debate with Donald Trump anyway. When he's in the debate, his behavior is a little bit awkward. I have given Bobby an opportunity to debate me. He and I have served on a panel before, but that was with strict rules that we were not to engage in a debate. I don't believe that he is taking me up on that offer, but I thought it was a good idea for him anyway, if he wants to demonstrate to the world that he actually has a libertarian streak.
Question, why do you think RFK Jr. did not begin this campaign running as a libertarian?
I think two things need to be said about that. One is that he's not a libertarian, and so I don't think it occurred to him as sort of in the natural course of things. He's basically, and I don't mean this to sound completely pejorative, he's a good government kind of guy. He wants government to work better. He's a bit of a, a Democrat, a statist. He wants the government to have a certain positive role in our lives that I just don't believe that the government is able to provide. The other thing that needs to be said is that he had been planning on earning ballot access himself. And when he started out, I don't believe he realized how difficult that would be and how expensive it would be. I think that the reason he developed an interest in the Libertarian Party was not because all of a sudden he had a philosophical overlap with libertarianism, but that he was coveting our ballot access.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember the Goo Goos. Their high watermark, if you want to call it that, was Mayor Kevin White and his henchman, Barney Frank, who ended up becoming my representative when I lived in Massachusetts. And the good government folks brought you the Boston busing crisis because people thought it was a racial issue. And unfortunately, there was a significant racial component to it. But what it really amounted to was that the poor people of Charlestown were being bused down to the poor section in Roxbury, and the poor people in Roxbury were being bused to the poor section of Charlestown and South Boston. Everybody was going to somebody else's schools. Nobody was able to go to their neighborhood schools. And it basically was pitting poor people against poor people. And the only people not affected were the children of the good government folks running the entire debacle. And, you know, that's it crystallizes how these people view the world. They view government as a mechanism to meddle in people's lives, thinking they know better. And I'm pretty sure that the libertarian perspective is completely 180 degrees out of phase with that.
It is completely different. And by the way, none of those two groups of poor people were going to decent schools. They were basically being shipped from one crappy school to another crappy school. Yeah. And people who could afford it were avoiding the system altogether. I don't think most people realize that when you tell people, we don't believe in school choice, we believe you got to go to the school that we pick for you, whom you're really hurting are the people that can't afford to escape from the system. And that's a real shame in my view. I agree with you. Libertarians are all about choice. And typically that choice means getting out from under government influence. We have learned the hard way, generation after generation, that notwithstanding best intentions, the government is simply unable to make decisions that are in our interest, that align with our values, that achieve things that we want to have achieved. And I think that Americans are waking up to the idea, finally, that our government is run by people with a different set of values, a different set of principles that don't really care how we see the world. And you know this is true because the government makes decisions that you wouldn't make if you were in charge.
Isn't that such a fundamental sort of benchmark or litmus test for where we're at right now? Like if you come across someone new and they still say things like, well, they shut my business down to keep me safe, or well, they gave me this injection so that, you know, other people would be safe. I mean, it's always they stole 40% of my income just to make sure we're safe on the road and that our schools are awesome. I mean, it's the most disingenuous, false paradigm that so many people still live in. But it seems like a lot of people are sort of removing the fog of propaganda war there.
They are gaslighting us. When a politician says that he or she is all about keeping you safe, what they typically mean is what you have to fear is not the loss of your civil liberties. What you really have to fear is that other idiot coming to power. I need greater latitude to keep you safe. I need greater power. I need greater control. I need more of your resources. This is fundamentally where authoritarianism comes from. And we know this and we recognize this in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. Each has left behind what used to be their agenda. All of us are old enough to remember when those parties stood for a political agenda, a set of policies that it has largely left behind. And now you have to admit, however you feel about those parties, you don't have to be as mad at them as I am personally, but you have to admit each one has adopted as its number one platform, keeping the other side out of power.
Well, I'm actually more upset with the Republicans than I am with the Democrats because I've never been stabbed in the back by a Democrat. That's for starters.
Stabbed in the chest by a Democrat. Not
exactly. You see him coming and you've got a 50-50 shot at being able to fend off the attack. But I'm like a porcupine with all the knives I've taken from Republicans over the years. And what amazed me the most, Mike, recently was the audacity of the government saying we need all these extra surveillance powers. We're not going to use them. But we need these surveillance powers against American citizens just in case. So go ahead, Congress, and give us these powers. We promise not to use them, but we need to have them just in case. Well, just in case, in 3, 2, 1, boom, go.
That is so disingenuous and so much gaslighting that it bothers me on an ethical basis, not just an operational basis. And it bothers me, too, that this is the group that stands between us and the Federal Reserve System that wants to issue its own digital currency and have access to information on every single transaction in which you engage. And I happen to know, Tim, you and Brian both do some weird things with your money, and I'm sure the government is curious what kinds of transactions you guys are engaged in. And make no mistake, if the government issues an electronic currency, it will absolutely share that information with the Treasury Department, with the Justice Department, with your state government, and probably anyone else who holds up their hand and says, I need to know what Brian and Timothy are doing with their money.
Mike,
yeah,
promise not to tell people I bought some Twinkies today. Come on, man.
And we're sitting here saying the same thing about our government. Hey, we would like to know what you're spending our money on. We'd like to know exactly what percent, you know, you're taking 40-60% of our incomes. We would like to see exactly which roads and schools this has improved. Could we have a list? And that's the kind of talk that really gets them going, oh, whoa, wait a minute, wait a minute. Now, you mentioned the Fed. I know that you are not afraid to say, end the Fed, end the FBI, end the IRS. With, you know, you say things that excite people in the libertarian community and the conservative community, and quite frankly, in what I call the DGAF voter category. Look it up if you're not in the know, but I won't say it on radio. It's sort of a family show. But what do you expect you would hear in response from, say, RFK Jr. if you were to take it to those libertarian levels in a debate with him?
RFK would stand up for most of these agencies. We know that he, you know, once in a while says the right things, but it's not a matter of principle. The big difference between RFK Jr. and libertarians is that he believes the government can play a positive role. And I'm beyond it. You guys see I've got some gray hair. I remember a time, the 60s, the 70s, when we were much more optimistic that the government could get things right. Fool me once, shame on you, and not again. I think Americans are less naive than ever before. But you look at a guy like Bobby Kennedy. Look at the vaccine regime, for example. The reason he doesn't like the vaccines and the vaccine mandates is because he doesn't like the science behind them. He believes that vaccines haven't lived up to, you know, their promise. And I get that. I agree, right? But a libertarian would have you know there is no such thing as a vaccine good enough, perfect enough, cheap enough, safe enough, tested enough, that the government should be allowed to coerce you into taking it. And so in that sense, it has nothing to do with the science. It has nothing to do with how good the government is at developing vaccines. The government should not be allowed to participate in the development of vaccines. And so in that sense, I don't think it's a wise idea to try to reform the CDC. The CDC is an organization that should no longer exist.
Yeah. I agree. I'm of the camp that as soon as you hear the three words, should the government, my immediate response now is no. Should the government,
unless
no.
It's followed up with go away.
Right?
Get smaller.
Look, I'm the cockeyed optimist, Mike. All I want, my one political wish, is to have a federal government that fits back inside the Constitution. That's all I want, but I'm a radical for
that's
wanting
that. That's a pretty
that.
Small place, Tim. I'm not sure we're going to get it that small anytime soon. But I do believe that if you're waiting for a Republican politician or a Democratic politician to lead the charge back toward a constitution of delimited powers, to lead the charge back toward fiscal conservatism, back toward a defense posture that does not project military hegemony around the world, I think arguably you're waiting for something that just seems like it's never going to happen. And that's the big reason why I believe it's high time for the Libertarian Party to play a major role in American politics.
What do you think about this WHO pandemic accord that they're trying to sign right now? This is, you know, you talk about ending the CDC. Can we go one step higher? Can we end the WHO? I mean, why is our country funneling tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into this agency that, you know, with the CDC and all the, you know, COVIDian creatures that came out of the swamp back in 2020, why are they even having this discussion? Why is our government even, you know, entertaining the possibility? And that's certainly something that doesn't fit inside that box with the Constitution.
I agree. In fact, no one would even argue that it fits inside the Constitution. This is just an idea that's outside of our government, that our government seems to be kowtowing. Why would we take money from Americans, including from a lot of American families who are among the least able to afford it? Why would we take money from Americans, use it to send abroad to an organization that would boss around our government? Not even we can boss around our government. And now we're subjecting our government to policies made by people outside of the United States, much less citizens of the United States. It's completely cockeyed. And you see this over and over again. It's not just the WHO. You have the same phenomenon with the United Nations, right? You have the same phenomenon with the OECD, the Economic Coordinating Organization, that the White House, the Biden administration, wants to use to coordinate tax policy so that there would be a minimum tax rate. I'm not making this up. This is not a metaphor. The White House wants to coordinate a minimum tax rate for corporations across all nations so that it's impossible for a corporation to flee the United States and go someplace else where it can find a lower tax rate. Holy moly, can you make this stuff up? It's absolutely unethical. I don't often use the word evil to describe public policy, but taking away someone's right to even seek a competitive environment, that's really ethically problematic.
So, Mike, we've got a couple minutes left. Let's fast forward and mirabile dictu, you win the election. How does a libertarian government look on January 20th, 2025?
Damned busy. You've got to take some unilateral action with regard to the bureaucracy. That means making much of federal regulation subject to the approval of state governors. You've got to develop a way for states to be able to nullify a lot of federal, not only regulation, but legislation, and resolve those conflicts in state court. You've got to start bringing troops home, closing foreign bases. You've got to make phone calls to our partners in, fill in the blank, Ukraine and Moscow. You guys are going to negotiate a settlement, and I mean by 6 weeks from now, to our allies in Europe. Whatever was your plan B is now your plan A, because the United States is withdrawing from NATO next year. It is not an ethical proposition for us to use American resources to back you up when you won't spend the resources to do it yourself. Phone calls to investors in Taiwan. If the reason you've been investing in Taiwan is because you believe that you need to be in place where the Defense Department and the United States government will back you up come hell or high water, can I interest you in a place like Milwaukee, which is a place where the U.S. government should be backing you up come hell or high water?
Absolutely, Mike. We're going to have to leave it there. Exciting ideas indeed. I wish you luck getting the nomination. We'll have you back here on State of the Nation. Stay tuned for the Jason Berman Show right here on TNT. For Brian McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. Until next time, God bless you. God bless these United States. Keep fighting the good fight.